Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Tzadi Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the bottom of Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis at the Mishnah. This Mishnah will compare and contrast the process of smicha, the placing of hands on a korban, contrasted with tenufa, the act of waving the specific limbs of a korban. That's a ceremony that was described in a previous sukkah, together with smicha, as being shiore mitzvah. Let us now turn to the Mishnah. Chomer b'smicha mi b'tenufa, u'b'tenufa mi b'smicha. There are stringencies associated with smicha that one does not find by tenufa. Tenufa is the waving action. U'b'tenufa, and there are stringencies associated with tenufa that one does not find by smicha. So the Mishnah starts off with the stringencies of smicha. She'echad meinif l'chol hachavirim. If you have a jointly owned sacrifice, one of the members participates in the waving. V'ein echad somech l'chol hachavirim. However, when it comes to the placing of the hands, one is not sufficient for the placing of the hands, and all of the owners of that particular jointly brought korban must do the smicha. Chomer b'tenufa, a stringency that one finds by tenufa. Sha tenufa noheges b'korbanos hayochidu b'korbanos hatzibur. The tenufa is something that one can find by a private-type sacrifice and a public-type sacrifice. Continuing at the top of Tzadik Dalet Amud Aleph, b'chayim u'b'shutin, it's something that's done with live animals and something done with meat that's been slaughtered. U'b'davar sheyesh bo ruach chayim, u'b'davar she'ein bo ruach chayim. One finds waving by things like meal offerings, which are not a non-living entity. Masha'ein kein b'smicha. This range you do not find in the case of smicha. Smicha is done only on a living animal. The Gemara will raise that particular point as a question later on, where the Gemara thinks there might be smicha by shchutin as well, things that have been slaughtered, meat, but that will be rejected. Before learning the Gemara, let us take advantage of one of the many features of the Gemara marking system, the Shas Ozer, which is the cornerstone of our program. We have titles of topic headings in the outside margin. In this case, our Nosei, as it's called, we have written Korban Shel Shutfin, a jointly owned sacrifice. Point one, Kulam Somchen, all of the members have to do this smicha. Point number two, Ein Kulam Menifin. But when it comes to the waving, it's not necessary, and in fact, only one does the waving. The Gemara will present sources for this information. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara opens up with the Tanaic source. You can see it's in a frame. In the Gemara marking system, we attempt to frame off all Tanaic literature so as to set it aside, set it apart from the rest of the Gemara text. The Pasuk says, Korbonoi. L'rabois kol balei korban l'smicha. The Pasuk says, V'samach yodo al rosh korbono. So that smicha is done, and this drosha is telling us that all of the owners of the korban participate in the smicha. She yochol. Well, without the pasuk, I would have thought as follows. Vahalo dinhu. Following logic, I would have reasoned as follows. Uma tenufa shinis rabsa b'shchutin nismata b'choivrin. The tenufa process, the waving process, is done with slaughtered meat as well. In other words, it's expansive. It doesn't apply only to living things, but also to slaughtered things, to the meat. And yet, nismata b'chovrin means only one does the waving. smicha shalonis rapsa bishkutin, smicha which is more, is already less expansive than tenufa. It's more limited in so far as that it does not apply to slaughtered meat. Smicha is done only on a living animal, not on an not after it has been slaughtered. So it's already more limited in that respect. Eino din shitismai b'chovrin. All the more so, it should be limited when it comes to who participates in the smicha. Namely, only one should do the smicha. Talmud Lomar, therefore, the pasuk comes to counter this logic and says, Korbono, the rabbis call bale korban the smicha. That all those who are owners, who are joint owners, shutfen in a korban, they all participate in the smicha. Once we've established this point, the Gemara now attempts to offer an alternative piece of logic regarding the tenufa. And this attempt, this question, if you will, which lasts a few lines, and you can see that we've indicated this with our long question marking. You see a shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dash line, indicating that all of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this form the question. So this is a suggestion, but you will see it will be rejected. V'tisrabe tenufa b'choivrin mikal v'chomer. Being that smicha, we said all owners, all partners participate in the smicha. Let us say the same thing with regard to the tenufa through kal v'chomer logic. And here it is. Uma smicha shelo nisrabsa b'shchutin nisrabsa b'choivrin. Smicha, the placing of the hands on the animal, which is limited to shchutin. And yet, even though it's limited to shchutin, when it comes to participants, it's expanded to all the owners. Tnufa shenisrabsa b'shchutin, the waving ceremony, which includes slaughtered animals as well. And you find it applying by Shalmei Yochid, you find it by Shalmei Tzibur. Eino din shenis rapsa b'chovrin, certainly it should include all of the owners. So that as a result of this logic, we are suggesting that tenufa should be expanded to all the owners. So the Gemara answers, mishum delo efshar. The logic may indicate that every owner, every partner should do it. However, practically speaking, it's impossible. Hechi levin, what should you do? What would you? How would you have it that all the participants are involved with the tenufa? Suggestion aleph. First suggestion. Linfu kulu bahadi adadi. If you'll suggest that they should all do the waving together, if you have several owners, they all place their hands under the meat and do the waving action, that won't work. Kohavio chatzitza. The idea behind tenufa is that your hands are in contact with the meat. But if you have several people doing the waving, so one person will be supporting the meat on his hands. The next person will have his hands under the first party's hands, and the third partner will have his hands under the second party's hands. In other words, there isn't direct contact with the korban itself, other than the first person. So that's a chatzitza. Chatzitza is an interposition. The hands of the first person are blocking the second person's hands from having contact with the sacrifice. So that's invalid. A second suggestion, linif, let one person do the tenufa, and then the second, his friend, do the tenufa, and down the line, multiple tenufas, each one doing it on his own. That is not acceptable either. Tenufa, Amar Achman, velo tenufos. When the Gemara speaks about the process of tenufa, it speaks about it in the singular. One waving, not multiple wavings. So the suggestion of having everyone as a partner in the sacrifice doing the tenufa is rejected. The Gemara asks a new question. This is a kasha, and we've indicated to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text the length of this question with a kuf that's encircled and a descending vertical dash line, indicating that all of these lines are forming the question. Usmicha b'shchutin lesa? Is it so that there is no smicha when it comes to slaughtered meat? This, by the way, we've used to entitle our sugya, under our no say heading in the outside margin. You can see we've written ein smicha b'shchutin. Smicha is not practiced with regard to meat that's been slaughtered. V'ha d'koyin gadol samach al ivorei hatamid. We will see in the Gemara a situation where the Kohen Gadol, if he wants to offer the limbs of the daily sacrifice, the daily, there's a korban tamid shel shachar, tamid shel bein arvayim, and generally speaking, 11 kohanim participated in offering the limbs of that morning sacrifice. Some carrying the legs, some carrying the back legs, you have the front legs, you have the different limbs of the animal, different organs. Those involve 11 people in the offering of the tamid shel shachar. If the Kohen Gadol should decide that he wants to do the offering, the Kohen Gadol will stand on the ramp leading up to the top of the Mizbeach, and he will be handed the limbs of the Korban Tomid. In that process, the Kohen Gadol places his hands on each limb before it being thrown into the fire. So we see a placing of hands. The Gemara will eventually say that that's Hainu Mipnei Kvodo. That's an act of honor bestowed to the Kohen Gadol. It's an act of honor that is in order to honor the Kohen Gadol, to create an impression that he is the one responsible for the offering of that particular korban. But it's not an official act of smicha. It's rather a gesture done to honor the Kohen Gadol. But before we get to that particular answer, let's appreciate the question. So the Gemara asks, "Usmicha b'shchutin lesa? Is it so that the smicha is not practiced on slaughtered meat?" The Hotnan, we have the following Tanaic source, and you can see it's all in a frame. This is a source from Maseches Tomid. Bizman shekohen gadol roitze lahaktir. On the occasion, or in the event that a Kohen Gadol wants to offer the Tamid, Hoya Oyle Bekevesh, he would ascend the ramp leading to the top of the Mizbeach, the Hasgan Bimino, the Skan would be an assistant or a vice Kohen Gadol. He would arrive. He would ascend to with him to his right. He Gia Lemachsis Hakevesh, when they reached halfway up the ramp leading to the Mizbeach, Ochaz Hasgan Bimino, Veheleu, he would grab hold of the Kohen Gadol by his on his right side and help him go rise to the top. V'hoishit loy horishon horosh v'regel. Then the Kohanim that were still on the floor, the first one would take the head and the leg of the Tamid and hand it to the Kohen Gadol, who was standing now at the top of the ramp. So the somech aleim. Vizorkon. You notice we've dashed under the line Vesomech Alehen, because that's from this point arises the question. We see smicha done. There was a placing of the hands of the Kohen Gadol would place his hands on the Rosh Veregel that were just handed to him, and then they were thrown into the fire. Hasheni Lorishon, Hoshit Hasheni Lorishon Shte Yodayim, the second Kohen who was part of the group of 11 that saw to it that the limbs of the Tamid were offered. So the second one would then hand to the first one, Shtei Yodayim, the two four legs of the animal, Noisnoi L'Kohen Gadol, and again, Somech Aleihem V'Zorkon. The Kohen Gadol would place his hands on these two Yodayim, and they were then thrown into the fire. Nishmat Hasheni, the second Kohen, would then depart for Halachlo and leave. V'kach hoyu moshitin lo shar kol evorim, and this same process would happen again and again with regard to the balance of the limbs. And again, you see, we have this emphasis on somech aleim v'zorkon. The Kohen Gadol would place his hands on the limbs that were handed to him, and they were then thrown into the fire. U'bizman shehu roitze. Who somech v'achirim zorkin? And in the event that the Kohen Gadol should so desire, he would place his hands, and others would throw it into the fire. So in the first case, in the first part of the source, until this last note, the Kohen Gadol was placing his hands, and the Kohen Gadol was throwing the limbs into the fire. And if that maybe is too much for him to do, so he could do the smicha on the shechted meat, and others would throw it into the fire. What do we see from all of this? We see smicha b'shchutin. Amar Abaye responds and says this is not official smicha. Hasa mishum kvoidoi de kohen gadol. What we're witnessing in this source is an act done to honor the kohen gadol. In other words, we have provided for the smicha, where the kohen gadol places hands. And let's glance at the Rashi, the upper part of the page at the end of the first Rashi commentary. Namely, we're looking at the point in Rashi right before the Rashi Ksav Yad. Mishum Yakro, the kohen gadol. Yakro is what the Gemara has here as kvodo. There are other gersos that change the word kvodo, meaning honor, to the Aramaic Yakro, because of the honor of the kohen gadol. She nire, Rashi says, it should appear kemo shehikriv hu es kulan. It should appear as if he is offering everything. Hoyosemech aleihen, he would place his hands on these limbs. V'lo shetei smichosim noheges b'shutim min haTorah, but no one is suggesting that the smicha is something that's required from a Torah perspective, but rather it's my opinion this Rashi would be best understood from the very last clause of the Tanaic source, where he was only placing his hands and others were throwing the limbs into the fire. But even so, by the fact that he was placing his hands on his hands on those limbs, it gave the impression that he was offering everything. We now turn to the new perek, perek Shtei Alechem, the 11th perek of Menachos. Before learning the Mishnah, let's glance at the note we have to the outside margin, the Nosei, Shnei Alechem, V'lechem Aponim. These two types of offerings, the Shnei Alechem, were two loaves that were brought on the holiday of Shavuos. The Lechem Aponim were the 12 loaves that sat from week to week in the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. They are Niloshos Achas Achas. These loaves are kneaded one by one, kneading the dough. They are kneaded one by one. Avol, the afia, when it comes to the baking, there is a difference. Shnei halechem nefois echad echad. The shnei halechem were baked as individual loaves, individually. The lechem aponim, shtayim, shtayim. When the lechem aponim were baked, they were baked two loaves at a time. We should mention that the lechem aponim, there were a total of 12 loaves that constituted the lechem aponim. In their baking, two loaves were baked simultaneously, two at a time. Now, the Mishnah. Shtei halechem, niloshos, achas, achas. The shtei halechem, the shavuos offering of the shtei halechem, were kneaded loaf by loaf, individually. V'ne'efois, achas, achas. And they were also baked individually. Lechem aponim, niloshos, achas, achas. The lechem aponim were kneaded one by one. However, v'ne'efois, shtayim, shtayim, that were placed into the oven in units of two. U'betfus, hoya oisa oisan. There was a tfus. A tfus is a mold or a form was used in the preparation of these loaves. Kshehu rodon, noisnon litfus, and when he rodon is removed from the oven, they were also put into a form. Kedei shelo yiskalkalu. These breads had a special form to them. At the end of this omid, the Gemara will start a sugya asking, what did the Lechem Haponim look like? So until we get to that, just we'll bear in mind that they had a special form. They weren't just, as we would say, a hunk of baked dough, but they were they had a special form, and in order to preserve this form, we had molds that were used. Mino hani mili detonu rabbonan. What is the source for the information we've learned in the Mishnah? The source opens up with a posuk from the Lechem Haponim. It says there, Shnei Esronim Ye Hachalo Hachas. Esronim, Isoron, is a dry measure of flour. So the Hachalo Hachas, one loaf, had the two Isoron, was its measure. Melamed Sheni Loishois Achas Achas. The pasuk says hachalo hachas, so we are to learn from this pasuk that the kneading was done one by one. Minayin she'af shtei halechem kach. From where are we to know that the shtei halechem also, when it came to the kneading, were one by one? In other words, a batter was created for an individual loaf. Talmud lomar yihyeh. The pasuk mentioned shnei esronim yihyeh. The word from the word yihyeh, we expand this halacha of individual kneading to include the shtei alechem as well. Uminayin she'afiyotzon shtayim shtayim. From where do we know that the baking of the lechem haponim were done two at a time. Talmud Lomar, this is Pasuk Vov. The first Pasuk that opened the source was Pasuk Hey, which spoke about the Lechem upon him. So the Torah continues in talking about the Lechem upon him. It says, Vesamto Oisom. And the word Osom in the plural indicates they're baking. Rashi explains, how do you see baking in this Pasuk, the form Vesamto. So Rashi, if we glance over at the side, into Rashi, Vesamto Oisom, Simo Rishon Shata Oisimehem, the first placing that you ever do with regard to the lechem upon him, the hainu batanor, where do you place them first before they ever get to the shulchan of the hechal? They have to be baked. So their first placing is in the oven. So that's when you are baking them, the hainu batanor, tehei beloshon oisom, it should be in the plural. This implies, shoyanoisen shtayim, b'shnei defusim yachad batanor. There were two loaves, each loaf in its separate mold, that were placed together into the oven. So, from Vesamta Osam, we learn that the lechem upon him were baked in units of two. Yochol af shtei halechem came. Turning back to the source, the question is, should we say the same thing with the shtei halechem, that the two loaves brought on Shavuos are baked together? Talmud Lomar, Oisam. So the Torah explains, uses the word osam, which is exclusionary, them, the lechem upon him, and not the shtei lechem. The Gemara asks, hi osam, ha afikde, but we already use the word osam to tell us, to teach us about the baking in units of two. So how can you use the same word as to exclude shtei lechem? In other words, once a word is used for a particular drasha, that's it, one per customer. You can't use it now for something else. The Gemara answers, im kain, if this pasuk was limited to just that one point, then lema kro v'sam tom, if it was limited to teach me the plural baking aspect of the lechem upon him, then the Torah could have used a shorter expression, v'sam tom, and you shall place them. My v'sam to oisam, why is it elongated and split into two words? Shamas mine tarti, by the fact that the Torah used a longer expression to say what otherwise is the same thing, we are able to derive an extra point. And the two, Shmamas Minotarti, we learn 2 points, namely, they are baked in units of two, that is the lechem upon him, and also the ability to exclude the shtei lechem from this point. And when it comes to the shtei lechem, we said they are baked individually. At this point, the Gemara turns to a new issue, and on the outside margin under our No Say heading, we've written Gimel Defusim, three molds or forms, Lachonas V'afiyas Lechem upon him, that were used in the formation and the baking and the preservation of the Lechem upon him. Tonu Rabbanan, the source opens up, V'samta Oisam. Once again, that's a quote from the Pasuk, and we learn from here, Bitfus, in a mold, in a form. Shloisha defusim haim, there were three molds that were used in the lechem upon him. One, noisna lefus v'dayan hibotzek, it was placed into a mold while it was still dough. The mold was there to help in the formation of the shape of the lechem upon him. Number two, ukamin defus hoya lo batanor. There was a mold that was positioned in the oven that when it was in its dough state, it was then transferred to this second mold for baking. Ukshuroide, when he rode is an expression of removing from the oven. Ukshuroide noisno betfus, it was placed in a third mold. Kidei shelo tiskalkel, the third mold was used to protect the breads, so that their form is not ruined. The Gemara asks, "V'lahadra l'dfus kama?" When you remove the baked loaves from the oven, why do you have to put it into a third mold? Why not put it into the first mold that was used when it was in its dough state? The Gemara answers, "Kevan de'ofi lo nifnofcha." Since it was baked, in the baking, as you well know, there's expansion, so that the what was once a dense raw dough in a mold, that mold would not be sufficient anymore for the now baked loaves, hence we have a third mold to put the baked loaves in. At this point, the Gemara starts a new discussion concerning the shape of the lechem haponim. Itmar, lechem haponim ketzad oisin oisoi. Now we will see two opinions on this topic, and in the outside margin we can glance at our topic heading. Shnei deois eich hoyu nirim lechem haponim. We'll see two opinions as to how the lechem haponim appeared. One, kemin teva prutza. It appeared as an, literally as an open box. But for, we can explain this by glancing at the diagram that you see in the Rashi at the top corner of the page, the inside margin. That is a cutaway version, so to speak, of, if you could imagine, two panels and a bottom, two sides and a bottom. That's a the expression that the Gemara uses is something to the effect of, if you had a box and you cut away two of its four sides, leaving two opposite sides intact. This is what the lechem aponim would look like. That's kemin teva prutza. Another opinion, kemin sfina roikedes. Sfina roikedes might be translated loosely as a swift flowing boat, something like a canoe. So if you can imagine the shape of a canoe, you would be imagining what the Rabbi Yochanan's take on the appearance of the shtei halech, of the lechem aponim is. As far as the description of the sfina roikedes, there is a picture in the Rashi, but that picture in effect is a cutaway version of it, a cross-section of the lechem aponim in Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. We've made reference to our use of impressionist artwork in the Gemara marking system, and we've explained in the past that impressionist art is what the author's impression of what it may have looked like is. So that we've added a picture for a sugya later on, but you can see in the inside margin what may roughly look like a canoe. We should point out some of the differences. The teva prutza is a loaf that has a flat bottom to it. The sfina roikedes approach has a bottom that comes to a tapered edge. In other words, it's not a flat bottom, just as the case of a kayak, maybe, or some type of swift river boats. Their bottom is not flat. Now, before learning the Gemara, we want to explain some of the markings that you see. As you glance ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice triangles. The first three triangles all appear in the same direction, and they're actually aligned in the text, one under the other. And later, though, about halfway down the page, you'll notice at the beginning of a line an inverted triangle, and a few lines after that, there appears another inverted triangle. These are around the word Bishlamo, and under our Mivneh, note, Mivneh in our Gemara markings is a structural note where we attempt to explain the role of the different geometric forms. So the word Bishlamo appears in the triangle. These Bishlamo means it works out well. Svoros letoivas hadeo shelteva prutza. With the triangle point facing up, the Gemara will present points that would support the approach of Teva Prutza, approach of Rabbi Hanina. However, at each point in the Gemara, there will be a squiggle underline, Elo Lamadoma, what does the other opinion do with that particular idea? So the Gemara will offer a defense for the other opinion as well. But as you go on in the Gemara, you'll notice the triangle inverts. At that point, and we've noted in our note on the side of the outside margin, where the inverted triangle appears, point facing down, Letoivas Sfina Roikedes. Those will be Svoros in favor of the Sfina Roikedes approach, the Rabbi Yochanan approach. We've also used a double underline, which is one of our series markings, and the only reason we're using it is to create an additional sense of structure to this Gemara, repetitive structure, so that you'll see this double underline used, and it will go under the expression Laman Diomar. It's coming off the triangle expression Bishlamo, things work out well according to the opinion of, well, whatever. The first three will be in favor of the man d'omar kamin teva prutza, and the subsequent two will be in favor of the man d'omar sfina roketes. So that you can see very quickly by glancing at the position of the triangle and who it's coming to favor. As we mentioned earlier, we'll see another expression that's marked with a squiggle underline, el leman d'omar. Once we've shown how things work out according to one side, but according to the other side, the other opinion, it would appear to pose a difficulty until the Gemara answers each one. A word of disclaimer with regard to this omid of Gemara: it would be much easier to appreciate and understand what the Gemara is explaining if we had available some accurate diagrams that would accompany this Daf Gemara. So those of you who are listening to this year that can gain access to accurate, detailed diagrams, it will hold you in good stead. We will attempt, it may be a rather a poor attempt, a weak attempt, to offer some explanation verbally, making reference from time to time to pictures that are in the Gemara and those that we've included on the inside margin as well. Let us now continue with the Gemara. Bishlamo leman d'omar. Actually, let's just read the first line again. Rabbi Hanina says, Omar kamin teva prutza. The shape of the lechem upon him was like this two-paneled box. Two, meaning it's prutza, means literally broken open, so that instead of being surrounded on four sides, it would be a box that has only two sides to it, two parallel sides. And we've already made reference to the diagrams which may help you appreciate this. Before going on, we should mention that according to this opinion, the lechem haponim was essentially prepared as a long rectangular shaped piece of dough. The long rectangular shape would we'll call it, its length was placed over the width of the shulchan. So in effect, you would have two stacks of bread. Now, when we say the length of the bread was placed over the width of the shulchan, we must add that this long piece of dough had its two ends folded upwards. We had discussed this, we had touched upon this point in a previous sugya when the Gemara was discussing the goydish of the shulchan, how much of the airspace of the shulchan, or the area above the surface of the shulchan, is mekadesh things. This idea of height above the shulchan is a result of taking these long pieces of dough and folding up the sides of the dough, forming this shape called teva prutza. In order to preserve this shape, we mentioned that molds were used along the way until they were finally baked and eventually placed on the shulchan. So the approach of teva prutza, the Gemara says, Bishlamo, on the second line from the top, Bishlamo leman d'omar kimin teva prutza, hainu dehavu yasfi bozichin. Bozichin are receptacles that held the lavona spice that was offered on the Mizbeach every Shabbos at the time that the lechem haponim were distributed amongst the Kohanim. Now, these bozichin were receptacles that held this spice called lavona. If you say that the shape of the lechem haponim were the teva prutza, these bozichin were simply placed inside and would sit on the bottom of the lechem haponim. We mentioned there were two stacks of these loaves. On the uppermost bread of a given stack, on the uppermost bread, based on the pasuk that indicates the presence of the levona, it says in the pasuk, al hamareches levona zaka, on the mareches, on the stack, you would have levona zaka, pure levona placed. So if you have a flat bottomed loaf, so you would simply take these vessels and seat them or place them onto the flat bottom of the uppermost loaf. However, Elo Lamandomar, here with the squiggle underline, this is to indicate the contrast. The other opinion, Elo Lamandomar Kemin Sfino Roikedes, according to the opinion that held it was a boat that narrowed toward the bottom, as we described the tapering bottom. Hechi Havu Yasvi Bozichin. How could the Bozichin be placed inside and to sit inside the loaf when it didn't have a flat bottom to it? Answer: Mokoim Ovid Lehu. The Rashi explains that the one of the sides of the lechem aponim were fashioned in such a way that they were made thicker, possibly in such a way that you could place the bozichen on this. On this dofen, on this side of the bread. Bishlamo leman deomar kemin teva prutzo. Things will work out better according to the opinion of the teva prutzo. Hainu dehavu yasvi konim. Konim were golden rods that were placed across the top of each loaf. In fact, there were a total of 28 konim for all of the loaves, and the division of them was basically three konim sat per loaf, with the exception of the top loaves, where you didn't have three konim, but three konim were placed across the top. There is a diagram that is a function of our impressionist artwork on the inside margin. You can see the lines or the sticks, the konim that are seated on the top of the lechem aponim in the shape of the teva prutza. So you can easily imagine three rods that were placed there. The role of these rods, Rashi touches on it, is to prevent, to allow airflow between the loaves. These loaves were miraculously hot over they stayed warm over the week. And if not for this provision of airspace, there was a fear mold would develop. That was the role of these konim. But for our sugya, we're not so much interested in the role of the konim, but rather the positioning of them. So if you have the lechem haponim formed in a teva prutza, you can easily see how there would be room on the top of each loaf for three rods, three konim, to go across and sit on it, as is illustrated. Going on in the Gemara, Elo Leman de Omar Kemin Sfina Rokedes, according to the opinion that it was a canoe shaped entity, Konim Hechi Havu Yasvi. How could the konim be placed on them? Now, according to Rashi, we have a diagram that I have not seen in other places. I have seen attempted diagrams of this sugya in various booklets, but I didn't see this particular form. But we've designed we've illustrated the Sfina Rokedes so as to conform to the way the Gemara presents the problem, and the Gemara along with the Rashi commentary. Rashi explains that the Sfina Rokedes form would enable you to place one rod across the middle. As you can see, there are two parallel edges of the boat shape on which the rod could sit. However, when it came to the heads or the edges or the extremes of the boat, Rashi says they came to a point. And this is what we try to illustrate. Now, if something comes to a point, there isn't an appropriate surface area, so to speak, for a rod to sit. It would have to be through some type of balancing act, which obviously is not something appropriate. So, according to this Mad Omar, and that's what the Gemara is asking, Elo Lamad Omar Kemin Sfino Rokedes Konim Hechi Havu Yasvi. Where did the konim? How did the three konim? How could they be positioned on such a thing? So the Gemara answers, Musha Ovid Lehu. He would attach a clump of dough to the tips of the boat, where we've illustrated the Russian the Roshin Chodin. Roshin are the heads that are pointy, literally. So if a clump of dough was added to that, that would enable you, would give it more surface area, and you could position the additional two rods on the two tips of the boat. Continuing in the Gemara, Bishlamo Laman de Omar Kemin Tevo Prutza. Once again, things would work out better according to that approach. Hainu de Samchi Le Snifin Lalechem. The Snifim is a reference to, and here we don't have a, we have a side image, a picture of these in the Rashi. These are essentially panels. Two panels per stack of loaves. So that there would be four panels that were positioned alongside the edge of the shulchan, being aligned with the loaves. Now, if you looking at the picture that's printed in the Rashi, that would be a side version. So you can see the lechem upon him with the turned up sides, and the snifim, these panels that were set up alongside it. So the Rashi says, the Gemara, let us go back to the Gemara. Bishlam al ma'adomer kimin teva prutza, hainu de samchi le snifim alechem. Then we understand how the snifim were placed along the sides. Remember, each bread had a turned up side to it. So the snifim would hug, so to speak, the sides from both ends. Elo lemadomer kemin sfina rokedes. We should add a little bit more by way of explanation. Let's go over that last triangle. Bishlam lemadomer kemin teva prutza. According to that approach, hainu de samchile snifim alechem, we can understand how the panels supported the bread. The bread had these vertical sides to it, and the panels were placed up alongside, like snug alongside the bread, so that the panels helped support the breads. Continuing in the Gemara, Elo leman domar kemin sfino rokedes, hefi samchile snifin lelechem. According to the approach that you had a boat-shaped thing, that essentially the sides of the boat, as we tried to illustrate, or as it was illustrated in the upper Rashi picture, the what looks like a V, so the sides of the boat tapered in. They curved inwards. So according to that approach, of what benefit was there having these side panels to support the loaves? There was no point of contact between the panel, this side panel, and the sides of the boat, other than the top edge of each loaf. So how does that minimum contact help to support the supporting of the loaves? So that's the Gemara's kasha. Elo lamad omar kimin sfino rokedes, hechi samchi le snifim lechem. How did the snifim serve to support the breads? The Gemara answers, the ogil lehu me'agil. In order to appreciate this, we are going to have to rely solely on the illustration that appears in the Rashi, the last illustration on the page. Apparently, coming from the sides of these panels were some kind of extension that was constructed in a curved form, as you can see in the picture, and the breads that were made like sfino rokedes sat on these curved projections coming forth from the side panels. The expression de ogil lehu me'agil literally is something circular, and Rashi describes it that way, but for our purposes, instead of something that's literally a circle, which it was not, but rather it was something curved, that some curved protrusions that extended forth from the side panels helped to support the curved shaped loaves. Continuing in the Gemara, Bishlamo leman d'omar kemin sfino rokedes, noting how the direction has changed in the triangle, and it's also the direction of logic. Things work out better according to the opinion that says sfino rokedes, hainu de bo'inun snifin. It's with that I understand that you have a need for the snifim. The snifim, as they are, you can see, helped support support these boat-shaped loaves. Without them, you couldn't possibly imagine stacking such a form, such a shape. So, according to this approach, the Sfino Rokenes approach, I see the essential value in having the snifin, the side panels. Ela laman d'omar kimin teva prutza snifin lomali. According to the teva prutza approach, the side with the upright side panels on each loaf, what do you need the snifin for? You could, those lend themselves to being stacked one on top of the other. The Gemara answers, Agav yukro de lechem talach. If you had just the breads, yukro is the weight of each bread stacked one on the other, talach, the breads would break. Therefore, you had these side panels that helped, we'll say, distribute the pressure, take off the pressure of each loaf on the next one. Namely the side panels helping to hug or support the breads from the sides. Bishlamo lamando omar kimin sfino rokedes snifin al gabi shulchan min munachim. If you hold like the sfino rokedes approach, you could imagine the snifin were able to sit on top of the shulchan. In other words, at the bottom, at the very surface of the shulchan, which is essentially at the bottom of the loaves, there was surface area on the shulchan, because the bottom loaf tapered into a narrow edge. So that, being that that was the case, there was room, there was table surface area on which the snifim, these panels, could be supported, could be placed. Elo lamando amar kimin teva prutza, but according to the approach of teva prutza, and we described that before as the length of the breads were placed along the width of the shulchan, so that when the breads were placed on the shulchan, the entire bread bottom took up the width of the shulchan. So if the entire table surface, the shulchan surface, was already with the bread sitting on it, so where are you going to put the snifim? Turning back to the Gemara, let's read that from the squiggle underline. Elo lamadomar kimin teva prutza snifin hechi hecha, where hecha monach luhu, aaro monach luhu. Would you say that they're placed on the ground? So the Gemara answers, in fact, that's the case. These side panels, according to the Teva Prutza approach, the side panels were actually much taller than what would have been needed for the Sfino Rokedes approach. They were tall, and the bottom of these side panels of the snifim were on the ground itself, and they rose to include the height of the stacked loaves. So that's, the Gemara says, it is true, they were on the ground. The Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamot, Ledivri Omar Kismin Sfino Rokedes, according to the approach that the Lechem Aponim had the canoe shape to it, Snifin Al Gabi Shulchan Munochim. The Snifin could be placed on the Shulchan. As we mentioned before, there was surface area of Shulchan still available for the Snifin to be placed. However, Ledivrei Omer Kamin Teva Prutza, according to that other approach, Snifin Al Gabi Karka Munochin. The Snifin, the panels, were placed on the Karka, on the ground. In other words, they were, the bottom of the panel was resting on the ground, and the height of the panels continued up above to account for the entire stack. Keman Azla Hodom Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara wants to know, Rabbi Yehuda makes a comment, and we want to know according to which of these two opinions does his comment conform. He says, Halechem ma'amid es hasnifin, vasnifin ma'amidim es halechem. He describes a duality where the lechem, the breads, support the side panels, and the side panels support the breads. Now, this idea works out keman de omar kemin sfino rokedes. It works out according to that approach. Let's try to explain this. If you have the sfino rokedes, the panels had those circular or those angular protrusions extending from them under each bread. So each bread weighted down upon these protrusions from the side panels, creating a certain pressure on the side panels, holding them in place. And at the same time, the side panels with these protrusions helped to support the loaves. So we have just described what Rav Yehuda said. They're a two-way support system where the breads supported help support the panels, keep them in place, and the panels help support the breads, keeping their form. So that whole approach would work out, according to the Man Omar, Sfina Rokedes. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.